morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Tomorrow is the 19th anniversary of what has been called the worst day in American history, known to subsequent history simply as 9/11, which is all that is needed to conjure up the horror of that day, viewed by most Americans nearly the instant it occurred by the mixed technological blessing of electronic imaging on nationwide television. One of Donald Trump's lifetime of lies is that he was a hero of the cleanup of 9/11 at Ground Zero. Another more darkly deceitful falsehood is that he witnessed Arab Americans cheering at the attack on the World Trade Center on 9/11. He will likely repeat those lies tomorrow on 9/11's 19th anniversary commemoration, because not only must everything be about him, but that he is an ardent practitioner of sleight of tongue, that lies told often enough belie the truth. And now something I wrote, the worst day, 9/11 plus 19. Once upon a time in a fairy tale past, the United States of America thought it was safe from the strifes of the world. Isolated by oceans, it fatuously believed would protect it from faraway villains and monsters. Even after half a century of a nuclear arms race and development of intercontinental missiles, the USA assumed a Buck Rogers space shield would defend the nation from harm. And from its presumptively inviolate fortress, the USA exported a highly sophisticated form of terror, attacking countries all over the world for one purpose or another, generally from the sky with bombs and missiles. The USA pioneered many of the methods of war from the air and stratosphere and used aerial weaponry more than any other nation, especially on cities and small villages of other nations. The morning of September 11, 2001, dramatically ended the USA's illusory immunity. Yankee Doodle Land was finally attacked on its own sacrosanct soil by suicidal commandos who made guided missiles out of American airliners in a brilliantly lethal scheme of savagely calculated devastation aimed at the cosmic cathedrals of American civilization and its vainglorious ambitions for global supremacy. September 11th, 2001 has been called the worst day in American history, the day that changed America forever. It was certainly the bloodiest so far. Thousands died when three suicidally propelled jetliners crashed into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York City, destroying them entirely, and a large part of the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. A fourth jetliner crashed in a Pennsylvania forest, theoretically aimed at the White House. All passengers in the four jetliners, taken captive by the kamikaze terrorists who hijacked the planes, were killed. Quite possibly, passengers prevented the fourth from reaching its target. The appalling attack on the USA figuratively turned the world upside down, which was the title of a popular song the British Army played on its fifes and drums after losing the American Revolution to colonial rebels and terrorists in 1781. The images of the captive-filled jetliners exploding into both towers of the WTC, which afterward collapsed like imploded pancakes, persist as a national angst and highly charged nightmares of jetliners aimed at all our windows. Other images recall 9/11. Thousands of hands reaching up as if to stop the collapsing South Tower of the World Trade Center. Falling bodies of people who jumped to their deaths to escape the fires started by the penetrating jets. In particular, a man and woman holding hands as they fell to the street 100 floors below. Doomed firemen going up into the towers, passing fleeing survivors going down before the towers collapsed. The wreckage of the fourth skyjacked jetliner forced to crash short of its probable target of the White House or the National Capitol building by furious passengers who seemed fairly aware that everyone aboard were about to die regardless of their resistance. A few obscure images, seldom recalled or even noticed, were yet revealing and prophetic. Two crowds confronted each other in Chicago on the night of 9/11. One group, white and all right, the other brown and presumably Muslim, shouting at each other, USA, USA, USA. A young man on a bicycle in D.C., 9/11 morning, just after the third plane kamikaze the Pentagon, shouted the attacks on it and the WTC were appropriate punishment for the USA's oppressive foreign policy in the non-European world, and was pelted with food and rocks by a shocked and angry crowd. Police searched his clothes and knapsacks for explosives, then led him right away, exchanging shouts with people on sidewalks. A woman on 9/11 morning in New York City described a surreal atmosphere of people standing on street corners, staring up at the flaming towers, and after they collapsed, seemed to numbly look at the subsequent pile of rubble that was vast and several stories high. Another woman said she saw crowds of people walking away from ground zero, stunned after the towers collapsed. "Where are you going?" she asked. "Away," they said. A woman who had formerly lived in Astoria, Oregon, not to be confused with New York's Astoria, and who lived across the East River from the WTC, saw the Twin Towers burst into smoke and flame from a picture window in her apartment high off the street, and regretted she couldn't shut off the view like a television. Yet she did not close the curtains. She did move to Upper State New York soon afterward. The young daughter of a U.S. airline pilot said after 9/11, "I play with my dolls, and I think of Osama bin Laden. The dolls save the world sometimes, and sometimes they save the people in the airplanes." One man said he was accustomed to seeing New York City's skyline constantly change as a result of construction, but never before by destruction. Pearl Harbor was an analogy of the day for 9/11, complete surprise, a direct hit on the USA symbols of wealth and power. Epic destruction. The anger and instant desire for revenge were about the same as Pearl Harbor. Also the heart-wrenching sense of tragedy and the immediate finger-pointing at why 9/11 was allowed to happen. Suspicion of government foreknowledge of 9/11 has also been a Pearl Harbor legacy. Although Americans regarded whoever attacked the venerated homeland as cowardly terrorists, they undoubtedly considered themselves heroic martyrs, as slingshot Davids standing up against the monstrous juggernaut of Goliath Incorporated to revenge contemporary and historic grievances. They struck not only at the centers of U.S. economic and military power, but also at the heart of Western Christian domination of world civilization. America's beloved Uncle Sam is known to much of the world's wretched and impoverished as the Great Satan. A grievous crime was committed against the USA on 9/11, but not one that was undeserved or should have been so unexpected. We had lived a long time in a false bubble that whatever we do elsewhere in the world would not, in similar measure, bite back at us. Our Achilles tendon was exposed by the attack upon it on 9/11, and like Achilles, we will never eliminate its vulnerability to attack and harm. Only if we actually accept citizenship in the larger world and use our extraordinary power as was intended by our constitutional founders will we protect our vulnerability that is exacerbated by the way we currently treat the rest of the world as either friend or foe. We act instead on prerogatives of power every presumptuous world pancratiast has eventually been doomed for having utilized, generally conferring a legacy of waste and ruin as a monument. The following are excerpts of interviews with primarily resident Astorians for the newspaper North Coast Times Eagle in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. Start with Jesse Duncan, who was only in high school then. "The first thing I thought when the terrorists struck the World Trade Center and Pentagon was, we are going to war. This is a wake-up call for the country. We are not invincible, much as we like to think we are. It is going to be a long war. Richard Doocy. Of course, terrorism doesn't make sense, or there wouldn't be terrorism. There is no terror in what you can understand. As far as what to do about it, you can't invade people's countries to get at rogues. I suppose ultimately the answer to defeat terrorism is intelligence, in all sense of that word. And the famous Helmut John Waddell. Terrorism is an irrational and destructive act. Nonetheless, such destruction might suit the cause of nihilism, or deemed an act of revenge. Nihilism has no justification. Revenge has a cause, an eye for an eye. In Islam, you are allowed to ask for an eye for an eye. Such an act is Quranic doctrine and can be forgiven. A life for a life can be forgiven within communal service. It is not something you want to encourage or condone, but it is a de facto fact of life. Brandon Hernandez. I thought, this is really going to stink. I thought there would be a serious racial backlash, which has happened, but not as much as I thought. I think if they hadn't broadcast caution against Muslim discrimination, it would have been horrible. Sharon Clouser. If we didn't realize before that this was going to happen, we have closed our eyes to what has been going on the better part of forever. I think we will feel more suspicion and have less freedom because of it. I feel it could be used as a way to take more of our rights away. We were built on the concept of individual rights. Now it looks like we are going to be herded around like a bunch of sheep. I don't know what's going to happen to our children and grandchildren. I hope they are smarter than we have been. Lee Miller. I am concerned about going to war without a declaration of war from Congress. I am concerned about knowing our enemy. I want to know exactly who they are. I want to know their histories. I want to know what they think. And I think it should be made public to whoever wants to know. If we are going to pursue this public action, we must know our enemy. Roger Hayes. Are we to yet again evoke the clandestine and dark word covert in order to effectively describe an operation? Have we just entered upon as an historic juncture where we are determined by our actions, as subtle or gross as they may be? In a particularly American fashion, you may clutch a flag or activate a personal odyssey, or finally become swallowed in a blitz of media terrorism. Leave it to your imagination. Richard Johnson. We need to examine what it is we might have done or policies we might have supported that would in any way precipitate the type of deep hatred 9/11 symbolizes. Debbie Twombly. I know a man who was on the hijacked airliner that crashed in Pennsylvania. It was awesome to know someone who had been in Brownsmead. He was a game reserve manager. You look at someone who had much to offer and did good. You just have to realize that some things do not make sense and never will. You just have to go on with your own life, but not be so preoccupied with your life only. I am a teacher, first and second grade, and I have to do a lot of reassuring of my students and yet be realistic enough to make them aware the world is not always a safe place. Jack Sharbach. I have to admit from the outset that the understanding of such an act of terror and destruction as the attack in New York is beyond me. But this is what comes to mind. We spent the first half of the last century in two world wars to see who would run the world. Those wars ended in great hope for the future. That hope dwindled in the second half of the century as the richer, more powerful countries adopted foreign policies that, whether by intent or default, sharpened the disparity between the haves and have-nots, until this situation in the 21st century, in which whole continents have sunk into poverty while a small minority amass wealth. I have to wonder how long that could go on. Margaret Frimuth. I am watching myself go through grief, and I think about the people in the midst of it who lost loved ones. I think the grief process is important. I sincerely hope we have a sense of accountability for the actions that took place on September 11th. I want us to be accountable for how we as a nation handle our wealth and power as well. Deborah Seymour. It is overwhelming. There is nothing I can say in only a few words. I am so distraught. It is so dispiriting. I feel like a mother whose children have done something really bad. You feel anger, but you also feel compassion and a desire to provide them with wisdom and clarity. I feel as a woman and a mother that we must have the wisdom to go beyond war. Kelsey Elliott. I should hope the intelligence that has been garnered will avoid collateral damage. I don't want innocent people killed. We have had enough of that. I don't believe in an eye for an eye. R. McCartney. I want us to pay attention to those crazy people and their idea that our president is a dog, and burned him in effigy in their hate. This is an example of man's inhumanity to man and the destructiveness that can happen when people hate each other as dogs. No one sees the dog as the cause of the problem. Judith Nyland. I think the main problem is how we deal with the issue without destroying people who had nothing to do with it. Both issues must be addressed. You have these people in the world who think it is their sacred duty to destroy who or what they perceive are against their religious beliefs. Yet these same people are surrounded by other people who don't share their viewpoints. How do you sort them out? Anthony Sales. I hope and pray nobody else is hurt and this problem will be resolved in a civilized manner. I think we have a lot of trouble. We haven't seen the end of this. I just wish it had never happened, but it has. Bonnie Lively. We have a gluttonous society. We need a very catastrophic wake-up call to realize the extent of our gluttony and its effect on the rest of the world. It is tragic that 3,000 people had to die to wake us up to what we are. If we don't wake up to what we have done to the world, the lesson we can learn from the horror we have experienced will have been in vain. We have to pay attention to the way we have acted toward the world and understand why people hate us enough to do what they have done to us. Once we get to the root of that problem, we can start to repair it. I know that right now we have to deal with what will make us safe and protect us against further horror. But it always takes something catastrophic for us to change. You can go back to the American Revolution and the Civil War to see the type of dramatic, pivotal point of change that forces people to step up to the plate. Something good generally comes out of something horrible. If not, those deaths we have just experienced will have no meaning. Michael Link. I am totally baffled. I don't know what to think. I don't expect our nation to act any differently than it is, but where my heart is, I'm pretty confused. I think the government is using 9/11 as an opportunity to squeeze our civil liberties. We are practicing passive aggressiveness. We are dropping bombs with one hand and bread with the other. Are we the parent of the world now? Our leaders think that is our new role. Now they can create puppet governments to stop the evil one, Osama bin Laden. What is this, a comic book? Joe Lumpkin Brown. The first casualty of war is the truth, on all levels, by all sides. We as Americans wonder where all this hate could have come from. Wake up, America. Find your soul. Remember yourself. There is truth in self-inventory. There is truth in world history and universal time. Our world will never be the same. Thank God. We still have another chance to change. Mason Meyer. I want to get behind my president, but I think of Vietnam veterans and how many were killed at the same time the country was lied to about the war. If I smell a rat, it's because I think there is one. I don't want to rush to judgment. I want to see the right thing done. I just don't want to fall for a story like Vietnam. I don't think America should be lied to again. The people who perpetrated the attack on the U.S. should be held accountable. We should get the right people. Kevin Violette. What should we do about 9/11? Address the root causes. This is a viper we have nourished in our own breast. The American people, wanting to see only the good, have ignored the bad perpetrated in their name. By selling arms to repressive regimes and turning a blind eye to the injustices committed by our allies, we have made enemies. Terrorism is wrong, but it is the weapon of the weak against the strong. To see justice done is a natural and correct desire, but let it be done impartially. The U.S. should abandon its vigilante stance and pay its dues to the United Nations. International law is an urgent necessity. Fund the World Court and let it resolve international disputes. The days of the Old West are over. A world society needs a world court. Kate O'Neill, who lived in Grays River, Washington, wrote a letter to the Daily Astorian on 9/11. The scenes we normally watch on TV news looked much like what we saw this morning, don't they? We generally think little of them because they are so often of our own making and always in other countries. In fact, the brutal act we witnessed today was surely done in retaliation to one or more of the others we have witnessed on the tube and thought little about. We recently bombed a pharmaceutical plant manufacturing aspirin in Afghanistan. Our ongoing embargo of Iraq is slowly, agonizingly killing millions of innocents. Our tremendous flow of money and weapons to Israel has resulted in mass murder of Palestinians. We can all continue to cite examples of our terrorist treatment of other countries. The list is long. We don't even know who the enemy is this time because we have created so many. Isn't it time for us to examine ourselves and try to see why this happened and do what we can to stop the cycle of violence now? Because the violence will surely touch each of us all if we allow it to continue. Retaliations for retaliations will only get us more of the same. Please, dear friends, speak up now and demand at least a short space of peace in which to reflect, understand, and react sanely. And a poem by Jesse Duncan, who was 15. September 11th. Thunder in the wind, no rain. Peace mourns its passing, no pain. We are still human, but our existence is vain. Do we not bleed and die? It is always the same refrain. Nothing is right. Terrorism shakes its ugly mane. Are we not all human? Do we not feel pain? Peace comes to an end as the old moon wanes. Jets fly overhead. We decide to take trains. We are struck by horror. We are struck by pain. What do we do when the time comes again? Send our boys into battle. Watch them die in vain. Peace waves goodbye as war says hello again. Snow on New York City, 2001, by Margaret Bowler. Snow falls on the city, soft pattering, muting traffic, footsteps on slick sidewalk, stark glaring headlights of taxis, endless curtain of white, one, yet many, stifling, drifting, slanted, creamy sky, white snow, imperceptibly, one ends and the other begins. Snow somehow pulls away, separates from sky, mingling with gray of ruins ash. It's winter now in New York, across the United States, in Afghanistan as well. And snow is falling on the city, the Empire State Building, frosted white, the Chrysler Building, snowy. Snow is cloaking the people, spattering black leather jackets, umbrellas, ice crystals gathering on the backs of volunteers, sifting through the rubble of the towers, trying to find the remains of yet another human soul. It's winter, 2001, 2002, and snow is falling on New York, amid the broken towers, crushed nearby storm drains, choked with ash, now overflow with snow. No one bothers to clean them. A lone flag stands atop the ruins, not hampered by the weather, red, white, and blue, the only colors, apart from the gray of the towers, waving proudly. New York has been dealt a blow too cruel for words to express. Dumbfounded, we watched our blaring TV screens, witnessed the World Trade Towers crumble. Many have donated money to help victims' families, to aid in the excavation. I have too small a sum. I am too young to volunteer. So all I have to offer are these empty words, trying to make sense of a tragedy that, in an instant, brought a nation to its knees and created a date that would live forever on in infamy. 9/11/01. And that was Snow on New York City by Margaret Bowler, who visited New York on Veterans Day weekend in 2001. She was 12 years old and lived in Astoria when she wrote this poem. And as epilogue, we should also remember 9/11/1973, when the CIA engineered the bloody military coup in Chile against Salvador Allende, who had been elected the country's president 3 years earlier and was intent on nationalizing major industries controlled by United States corporate interests. Allende was murdered and thousands of Chileans executed under the U.S.-sanctioned regime of Augusto Pinochet, who governed ruthlessly until he was voted out of power when general elections were finally allowed in 1989. He died a fugitive from world justice. And, of course, maybe or not coincidentally, 911-911 is the national telephone SOS for emergencies in the USA. This is Michael McCusker. I should redress an omission I have been guilty of since I began pre-recording this program nearly 5 years ago. My recording engineers have been Kate Brister, Joanne Rideout, and for the last many months, Dylan Hauser Schulp. For the record, my forested neighborhood just off the ocean south of Waltport, Oregon, has been cloaked in a nearly stagnant fog of red smoke from nearby wildfires, which seem reminiscent of the old Tillamook fires of yore. The sun is a ruddy eyeball. Stay safe, and remember, protecting yourself protects everybody else. Visiting friends performed a class act by gifting me with a card with a mask enclosed. Pandemic philanthropy.